This program was first broadcast on Canterbury's access media station, Plains FM, and was made with the assistance of New Zealand On Air.
Coming up next, it's Studemonia, discussion and stories about living well in New Zealand, from international students across Canterbury, supported by the Ministry of Education.
Welcome to PGSA Radio, brought to you by the University of Canterbury Postgraduate Student Association, by postgrads, for postgrads. I'm Dattatre.
And I'm Micah. Hi, everyone.
Speech and language therapy has gained momentum in the past few decades, both as an effective tool and an interesting medical field. With us today is Thomas Gaffney, who will talk to us about his master's study in this area and later share with us some of the tips and tricks for his postgrad journey. Hi, Thomas.
Hi.
So, Thomas, tell us, what is your study actually about? And explain it to us like you would explain it to your mom.
Sure. So, speech and language pathology is a career, it's a discipline where you essentially you help kids with communication. That's part of it anyway. I'm Australian, so I'm from Australia. And so I have a background in speech pathology practice in Australia. About 8 years ago, there was this big shift in how disability was funded. Before that time, essentially the governments would fund organizations as a whole, and then you'd go with your kid to the organization as you would a hospital. You know, hospitals are government funded. Then 8 years ago, there was this big change where rather than the government primarily giving the money to the organizations, they actually gave them to the parents. And that resulted in parents being able to essentially pay speech pathologists with how they like, with, you know, buying services that they thought were handy, were useful, were beneficial. And that led speech pathologists in the industry to make private organizations to respond to this increased demand. Okay, bit of a mouthful. But essentially what I was looking at is, now that speech pathologists who work with kids who are funded by this scheme, mm-hmm. Do they still do the little things that make the intervention a little better, even though they might not be getting paid for it? So, for example, I was looking at specifically around if speech language pathologists, if they involve parents and how they involve parents with children funded by this scheme.
I see. And how did you get to this topic again?
So, this is very relevant to my past career, my past jobs. So I was working in Australia in 2016 to 2018 as a pediatric speech pathologist under this scheme. So I sort of saw how it worked. So I had one job where the organization, they wanted to just build as fast as possible and they wanted to make as much money as possible. And that meant that they sort of sacrificed all those nice little sundries, little nuances, you know, emailing parents, providing homework, going the extra mile so they could spend more money or more time on making money instead. And I sort of thought, oh, this is an interesting way to have a look and see how speech pathologists actually work under this scheme.
Wow, thanks for sharing that with us. So that makes me wonder, how did you actually find your way to UC from there?
Well, I guess after I finished up my work, my job, I sort of thought, oh, I'd love to go back to university. Mm-hmm. So I spent 2019 to travel. And then halfway through, I was like, man, I'd really love to go back to Christchurch. I was there in February of 2019. Thought it was one of the best cities I've been to in a long time. I still do think that. And so I had a look at UC. They had a great program. But I was traveling, so it made it a little bit difficult. So, for example, I interviewed my potential supervisors in Taipei. I sent off the documentation and paperwork in Tokyo, you know, and then I officially got accepted in when I was in Greece. And then I spent time in Thailand when I was still traveling all around the world.
What a journey.
Yeah, truly an international application for sure.
Yeah, truly. It was a big journey, actually. But I found my way back to Christchurch in 2020. Yeah.
Oh, that's an amazing journey. So, out of this research, what did you find? What did you find from this?
Yeah, sure. So essentially, the way I gained the data, or I accessed the data, was through a survey. Mm-hmm. So I sent out a survey, online survey, to participants through the organization, through the association in Australia. And within that survey, it had a couple of different sections. One was full of Likert scales, where Likert scales are essentially statements that you would agree or disagree with. So, for example, if I said, Dada, from strongly agree to strongly disagree, do you like cake?
Strongly agree.
Perfect, perfect.
Who would not?
So we had, I had eight of those statements. You know, from I involve parents in my intervention sessions to I allow for parents to say their opinions on the goals that we're working on to I provide homework to these parents so they could do work outside of the sessions. All these things that essentially, if you said yes to all of them or I agree to all of them, that would identify that you are facilitating parental involvement within the intervention. The findings for that were... great. Fantastic. Really, really, really happy with them.
Wow.
So the majority of responses to each of the Likert scale statements were I agree or I strongly agree. And that sort of said that my participants, they agree or they strongly agree that they involve parents, essentially, which is fantastic.
You really impressed me, Thomas, with what you're doing. It's great. What does it actually mean for speech language pathologists?
It means that we're doing the right thing. So, I mean, from my point of view, we're there not to really not to make money. That's not really our, we don't go into speech pathology to be lucrative and rich, have a lucrative business. You go there to help people and to help kids communicate better with their parents, with their families, with their friends, and at school. And so, a big part of that is to involve parents, and the fact that so many. Of the participants in the study were doing that really puts a big smile on my face. Honestly, it makes me so happy.
Well, that's wonderful.
Yeah.
That's an interesting fact. And why do you think this is important going forward?
I guess because there's this movement in speech pathology. You said there's a big speech pathology in the past decades has gained a lot of traction, which is true. And there's also a big shift from essentially therapists or speech pathologists doing things all by themselves. You know how you go to a doctor and you say, hey, I'm sick, what do I do? And they say, do this.
Right.
That's quite, it's quite traditional, you know, like they're the experts.
Yes.
They see you as the customer or the recipient of their expert opinions. And so we're having a big shift away from that for the better towards speech pathologists involving parents. And that means that parents can provide expert knowledge on their kids, you know, information that speech pathologists wouldn't really have without them, as well as, you know, the parents can do homework at home. They can be more happy with the services that are provided to them and their kids. So that just means that essentially parents will be more satisfied, kids develop better, and everyone wins.
Oh, that sounds really great. But as always in life, of course, there are for sure some challenges. So could you maybe tell us a bit more about the challenges that you were facing while conducting your research here in New Zealand?
Yeah, I think one thing that I didn't have a challenge with was the lockdown, funnily enough. I feel like all of my colleagues and all of my my friends in the postgraduate community, they had a lot of, issues with their studies being conducive, being able to be done within the lockdown environment. But I was totally fine. So that was one that I wasn't having an issue with, thankfully.
Right.
I think what I did have a big issue with is, honestly, it was just getting the numbers that I wanted, you know, the participants. Okay. I feel like you could send a million survey links out, you know, ask a million people to say, hey, fill out my survey, and you wouldn't get the numbers that you wanted. You know, no matter how hard you try. So,
yeah,
that was very tricky.
I see. That sounds like a very interesting journey of your research through the lockdown and everything. Any interesting stories from this entire journey?
Yeah, well, I guess lockdown was interesting for all of us. And I just started my thesis when lockdown hit. So I was about a month in, month and a half in. And I don't know about you guys, but... when I was in lockdown, I had video calls scheduled throughout the entire day, right? You know, from noon to two, and then three to five, and then dinner with my family at eight to 10, you know, that sort of stuff, you know?
Right.
And I was like, I'm just so sick of being available for these calls, you know, because I sound like a bad friend or a bad family member, but really, I had nothing to talk about.
Relatable, yes.
And so what I did to compensate or to sort of avoid those video calls is that I just changed my sleeping schedule from, you know, from the traditional midnight to 8 or whatever to I would go to bed at 7 a.m. And I'd sleep through the day. Yeah, so wake up at 3, 4 p.m.
Right.
And then one thing that happened was, this happened on Anzac Day. So I essentially was up during the dawn service. Usually you're supposed to wake up really early and go to the dawn service, but I was already up. So I walked out of my house, and it was 6 a.m. It was pitch black. And I walked out onto my street, and I stood there, and then I realized directly opposite me, very awkwardly, there was someone standing right opposite me across the street. And I didn't want to move because I didn't want to cause any disrespect to the Anzacs, obviously. And I don't think they wanted to move either. So we spent the next 5 or 10 minutes just staring at each other. and then we sort of just said, oh, good on you, see you later. Then I walked back in and I kept on working on my proposal. So,
wow, what an experience.
Sums up the human interaction during the COVID lockdown, eh?
Yeah, we were socially distancing, though. That's good.
Exactly.
That's responsible. That's the only responsible choice.
Yeah, very true.
Thanks for sharing it with us. So I would say now's the time for you to tell us about the most interesting findings up to date.
Oh, within the industry?
Yes. Or with your research, maybe any real-world potential impacts that you would like to share with us.
Yeah, great. I mean, really, this sort of bodes well for the world not being completely built on people wanting money. You know, people just chasing capitalism, as much money as they want, and people want to really help themselves. Because the change in this disability funding model in Australia that's happened in the past 8 years has essentially turned it from you go to a place and they give you a service to more marketized. You know, you think more of consumer provider, you know, consumer is the parent who has the money, and then the provider is essentially taking that money for a service. And even though things like involving parents in intervention, they might not be as lucrative, or you might not get as much money for if you're structuring your service that way, it's still happening, which is fantastic.
That's great to hear. So after all of this, if you could go back, like before the lockdown, would you still consider doing a master's?
Great question.
Well, yeah, that is a really good question. You know what? I had a great time. It was very, very tricky at times. And I feel like we don't really discuss how hard a thesis is within the community. It's really, really tricky. And I feel like everyone's had a hard time.
No, absolutely.
Yeah. But yeah, very worthwhile. Because you get this incredible product and you're progressing research an inch or a foot, but it's still progressing forward. So yes, absolutely, Dada.
Yeah. That feeling of having something solid at the end of it should hopefully justify whatever we go through it, right?
Absolutely.
Thank you for that, Thomas. Before we move on to the second part of the show, I understand you have some music for us.
Yeah. I chose a song by an artist, a young Australian guy called Dayglow. He had a great album in 2019 or so, and then he's come back with a new song called Close to You, which is a really nice, funky, synthy, indie rock tune. I hope you enjoy it.
Stick around for the rest of the night.
Hello, hello, and welcome back to the PGSA Radio. We have Thomas here with us today, who just told us about his amazing research and its applications. It's very, very interesting. Each postcard journey is very unique, and to take home lessons vary as much as the people, of course. So, Thomas, are there any life hacks from your postcard journey till now that you would like to share with us today?
So life hacks is in what got me through?
Yeah, I mean, yes. Anything interesting that you discovered during the journey and that helped you move through this?
Well, Earl Grey tea. Ooh. With a dash of soy milk and a nice bit of sugar.
I see.
That got me through.
Lovely.
Uh-huh. Yeah, many a... I listen to a lot. And you know those the Spotify, your year in review, the top five?
Yes.
Mm. My top was Animal Crossing soundtrack. So a lot of Animal Crossing, you know, music in the background, right, where you're just sort of, you're listening and it's very passive and you can sort of write. Also, really, if anyone's thinking about writing their thesis, there is this one software that no one uses, but it was the best thing I've come across. It's called Scrivener. Uh-huh. A lot of novelists use it as a primary writing software.
I see. Uh-huh.
If you're going to write your thesis, or if you're going to write a book, or if you're going to write an assignment, that's the one for you, Scrivener.
Well, could you tell us more about the software? What?
Yeah, I'm curious.
Yeah, because I've never heard of this software.
Yeah.
I want to know if it's useful for my thesis.
Oh, yes. Well, so I don't know about you guys, but I've heard people use Word, Microsoft Word, for their entire thesis.
Yes.
Oh, my gosh. And people use, what was it, LaTeX?
LaTeX, yeah, yeah. LaTeX. That, if you want to do LaTeX. Anything with math, that's LaTeX for you.
True. Well, if you're in more of a soft science slash degree where you're going to write a lot, Scrivener basically is, you can sort of set sections and chapters, and you can just do all these incredible things. So, for example, you can flick from your methodology section or your participant section to your conclusion or to all these sort of things. Mm-hmm. And it's like this big sort of novel writing software that can work for theses as well. I can't really describe it. You have to sort of look at the overlay.
I see.
But it's simple and it's beautiful, and it just means that you can just get to writing. You know, you don't have to go. I feel like with Word, I don't know about you, Micah, but there's like, it's just infinite
do
scrolling.
Do I feel judged?
Right?
No, maybe.
There's just a lot of scrolling and a lot of like, oh, where
you
was
are correct.
That? Yeah.
Yes.
With Scrivener, I never had to scroll more than
you're
a couple of pages.
You're selling it, Thomas. You're selling it, yes.
Yeah.
It sounds like a tool that you could use. And of course, like, undertaking a project as big as a thesis is in itself a big task, and then managing each subsection, I guess, which we're going through right now, is a big task. So something like Scrivener, which is oriented for something else, could be like reused here.
Absolutely.
That's definitely a big life hack.
Yeah. I think other life hacks were definitely having a big engagement in the postgraduate community. So, for example, the PGSA, the Postgraduate Students Association at the university, well, first of all, they're very good. And I know that. We have proof because last year, the PGSA, they won the Best Small Club Award at the University of Canterbury Supreme Club Awards.
I see, yeah.
Wow.
That's a testament.
That is very exciting, yes.
It is.
So if you're a postgrad and you're feeling a little bit, my life isn't as fun as it should be, I think the PGSA have some events for you.
I see. Yeah. As a member of the PGSA, we just concluded the speed meeting event, which was a huge success.
Yes, a great turnout, a lot of great conversations.
Uh-huh. Yeah, a lot of nice people there.
Of course,
the community definitely helps. The community definitely helps. And this has been a common theme across a couple of our shows, but the community aspect of the postgrad life is highly underrated, and it should be more emphasized along like this, like just like Thomas said.
Yeah, absolutely.
We're all in this together after all, aren't we?
Yeah, it's good to talk to somebody about things, right?
Absolutely.
The more friendly, the better. Yeah,
well, thank you so much for sharing your story with us, Thomas, today. We wish you great success for the future. And this is unfortunately already the end of our broadcast, but we will end it with a very nice song selected by you as well.
And thank you, Thomas, again. And we are Dattatre and
Micah
for the PGSA Radio, by postgrads, for postgrads. See you next time.
Thank you.
Thank you.
If you want to take me, go ahead and try my head. Experience is nothing compared to the sleep paralysis in my bed. If you want to love me, try to get inside my brain. Experience. is nothing compared to the nights I'm always up so late. Bird bugs in my mind, keep them all alive. Insomnia creeps at night, sleep paralysis till
try to.